each of us, in our own way, has made a decision as to what our entire lifetime was going to be about. For the most part, this decision, well, it was made unconsciously, like most of our life, and of course, lived unconsciously. For the most part, I have found in my many years of teaching that most people did not know they made this decision about their life. They thought they could deal with it as they went along. And maybe they thought that there was no decision to be made. Maybe they thought, oh, I'll get it along the way. Somehow it will be clear to me. But it never is. We start acting out of regret, doing only the things that we will regret. We never mature into understanding the larger picture of this life and what this life is all about. You've had many people, I'm sure, tell you what life is all about, telling you what you should and should not do, what you should believe in and not. Most people live by the lure of their physical body. It is the physical body that means so much to them. When I was in seminary, I was very troubled. I went into seminary thinking that this was the way, unity was going to be my way, that it would help humankind as well as myself. I wanted to apply myself beyond my parents' dictums, their influence, because I did not truly respect them at all. It was obvious to me they knew not what they do and did, especially with me. So when I went to seminary, it was partly because I wanted to find the way. I wanted to know what my life was to be all about, how I was going to live it, or it was going to be spent in confusion, in doubt, fear, and worry. Well, come to find out, after my training, and it was training, it was nothing more than a sales meeting, nothing more than a used car salesman. We were trying to peddle all of the people and tell them that we were peddling some kind of philosophy that was going to make them better. It was going to give them their human heart's delight. This was a terrible thing, and I realized it 3/4 of the way through. I was waiting for the climax. I was waiting for someone to say, now, here's what it's really all about, but no one ever did. Well, years later, after going to India and finding many different approaches and the way, the being exposed to the Buddha and his beautiful teachings, Jesus and his teachings of the Christ, and then lots of the teachings of the true way, the Tao. I saw how they all converged into not a philosophy, but a way of life. This was very, very enriching to me. So when I came back to the States, I knew that the message would not go over well in a society that was based in capitalism and competition, just like my fellow ministers were, all competing, wanting to tell people that they knew best and they would be popular. It was all about being popular. Well, that's where the money was, being popular. One day I was sitting in my office and those contemplations came back to me. What am I going to do? Am I going to sit here and finagle people to believe me so I can make my house payment and put some food on the table? Or am I going to show the way? It was a tricky thing. I had to call upon my mystical feminine. I had to call upon that lived within me to find the root of heaven and earth within me. I had worked very, very diligently in myself during those years, privately. Just like maybe you are right now. Maybe. And if you're really working on yourself, you will hear that mystical feminine, that divine feminine. She is there waiting for you. You and I have that place in us, that something, I call it. It is not something that is deliberately obvious to us. It's vague. We have covered up our lives with so many ugly things. Do you remember the story of the four wives? There was a rich merchant who had four wives. He loved the fourth wife the most and did not really understand the others very much. He adorned her with riches and robes and treated her to delicacies. He took very good care of her and gave her nothing but the best. He loved his third wife very much, but she wasn't everything to him. He was proud of her and always wanted to show her off to his friends. However, the merchant was always in great fear that she might run away with other men. He too loved this wife, this second wife. She was a very considerate person, very patient, and in fact, the merchant's confidant. And whenever the merchant faced some problem, he always turned to his second wife and she would help him out and tide him through the difficult times. Now, the merchant's first wife is a very loyal partner and made great contributions in maintaining his wealth and business, as well as taking care of the household. However, the merchant did not love the first wife, not deeply. And although she loved him deeply, he found that she hardly took notice of him. One day, the merchant felt ill, and he fell to a deep illness long before his day and time should have been. He knew he was going to die soon. He thought of his luxurious lifestyle, told himself, "Now I have four wives with me, but when I die, I will be alone. How lonely I will be." He asked the fourth wife, "I've loved you the most, endowed you with the finest clothing, and showered great care over you. And now that I am dying, will you follow me and keep me company into death?" "No way," said the fourth wife. She walked away without another word. The answer cut him very deep like a knife. The sad merchant asked the third wife, "I have loved you for all of my life. And now that I am dying, will you follow me and keep me company in death?" "No," replied the third wife. "Life is good here. I'm going to remarry when you die." And the merchant felt heartsick. Then he asked, finally, the second wife, I always turn to you for help, and you're always there to help me out. Now I need your help again. When I die, will you follow me and keep me company?" "I'm sorry," she said. "I can't help you this time. At the very most, I can see you to your grave, but I can't go with you." The merchant is devastated. A voice called out, "I'll leave with you. I will follow you no matter where you go." The merchant looked up. It was the wife he loved least. She was so skinny, like she suffered from malnutrition. Greatly grieved, the merchant said, "I should have taken better care of you while I could have." And then he passed. These wives represent our body and how much time we spend lavishing our body, worrying about our body, living from our body. The next wife is possession, status, wealth. And when we die, they all go with the others. The second wife is family and friends. And no matter how close we have been, they cannot go with us to the grave. But it is that first wife, the wife that is the soul, often neglected. Neglected in our pursuit of material wealth and sensual pleasure. And guess what? It's the only thing that will follow us, even go ahead of us in death. We don't cultivate our soul. This is the mystical feminine, your soul. It is the beauty of everything that you are. It is not and will never be something that we recognize in and throughout our life because we are so busy with the other wives. We miss our entire life. Well, as I sat in my office, I had to make a decision. Was it going to be one of the wives or the only real wife, the soul? I realized I neglected it. I did not understand it. In an effort to go along, to get along, and get along, to go along with my colleagues and my congregations, I had made a terrible mistake. I realized that. It bugged me all of my career up to then. Out of this, I made the decision to be unpopular. I made the decision to take the road way less traveled. And I needed a companion, that mystical feminine that lived within me and still does. It is the most beautiful thing about me. It has nothing to do with Gregory. It has nothing to do with his body, his pleasures, his confoundments, his confusions, his personal hell. I had to realize I was going to take a very serious step, but one that went way back into my childhood. This is the way it needed to be for me. So I made the step. People were confused. I created Aspire with the help of people who cared about me, cared about the bigger picture. This mystical feminine made my life possible. It was the goodness within. And though Aspire does not reach every human being, nor does it ring a tone in most people, it is there for people like you, such as yourself. I want you to have the experience. You are making decisions every moment of your life as to how this life is going to be. The mystical feminine, well, through its gossamer, its beauty, it seems that it is barely existing, and yet it is there constantly. It is the soul. It is that something that you can go to, no matter how difficult a life may be. No matter how difficult a life may be, there is that beauty in you. Do you remember the story? There was a child made of salt who very much wanted to know where he had come from, where he was going. So he set out on a long journey and traveled to many lands in pursuit of his understanding, his seeking. Finally, he came to the shore of a great ocean. "Oh, how marvelous," he said. He stuck one foot in the water, and the ocean beckoned him to come further. "If you wish to know who you are," said the ocean, "don't be afraid." The salt child walked further and further into the water, dissolving with each step, and at the end exclaimed, "Oh, oh, now I know what I am." These teachings of the Tao, they are the ocean of your existence. And they are beckoning you to find out not who you are, but what you are. And through everything that I have been through in my career, all the difficulties, one thing has been established. For whatever reason that is beyond the comprehension of a Gregory, there is that salt child that I am, that you are. And I always hope that through these discourses, and my work, and all the programs I've done to serve humankind, that you will join me and walk into that beautiful ocean, that beautiful ocean that says, "Let love live you." So together, let's meditate. walk into that ocean of our existence, the soul. Let that mystical feather